time for the Apple Watchcast. Johnny Ive reflects on the challenges of designing the Apple Watch. Macs are in short supply as wait times get longer. Next year's iPhone may be USB-C. And after 20 great years, we say goodbye to the iPod. Plus reviews of Ford Watch app and the Lexus Watch app. This and much, much more. It's all coming up next on the Apple Watchcast. This is the Apple Watchcast, episode 415, recorded Monday, May 16th, 2022. Lightning and Day.
It's time for the Apple Watchcast. Apple Watchcast, a podcast dedicated to the Apple Watch.
It's time for the Apple Watchcast, where we talk about any and everything Apple Watch, Apple's most personal and healthy device yet, and the number one watch in the world. I'm your host, Tom, and joining me is Vincent. Welcome to the show, Vincent.
Hey, glad to be on the iPod show.
Oh, yeah, we'll talk about that in a minute. Also joining us is Chris. Welcome to the show, Chris.
Hey, guys. I actually bought one about a month ago, so I might have been the last one.
You helped sell it out, didn't you?
Yeah, I think so.
You know what? We can probably just go ahead and talk about that because that's kind of the big story of the week.
Yeah.
Apple decided to discontinue the iPod Touch, which was the last official iPod device. I think it came out, the first iPod Touch came out in 2007. Was basically at the time like an iPhone without the cellular
part.
When it came out. But 20 years.
Yeah. Amazing, isn't it?
Oh, it is. I mean, you remember the first ones, right?
Oh, sure. Certainly.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I got one of the very first ones. I think we still have one somewhere with the silver back and the actual click wheel. It wasn't touch.
Yeah. That was kind of cool.
Yeah.
Click wheel, man. That was so innovative.
It was. It was amazing. In fact, there's something it was on Twitter. Somebody had mentioned that they thought they mocked something up on the Apple Watch, where the watch face was the old click wheel from one of the iPods to control the music on your phone. And said somebody should make this an app. And in reading it later, I think somebody actually did it.
But
I don't think they'd ever get it passed through Apple using their design and all that. But I think he was going to make it available on test flight.
That's fun.
Yeah, if that ever came out, I'd definitely look into that. It's pretty neat.
It is.
I'll put a link in the show notes if I could find it again. The first iPod introduced in 2001. Wow.
I was just still in the middle of listening to Tony Fadell's Build, so audiobooks, and he talks about the development of the iPod.
Oh, you started that book?
Memory lane. Yeah.
Oh, good.
About 3/4 of the way through.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah, that's very one nice. I want to review also. So we'll do that. We'll have maybe put a whole show on that. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, we could. Yeah, I'll catch up to you guys. It's next on my list.
Yeah. That was 2001. And he introduced it by what? He said 1,000 songs in your pocket.
Right.
Which is just genius marketing, you know, because at the time, everything was by specs, right? It was the size of the unit and the bit rate of the songs and what you could get. And you just like forget all the specs. This is what it does for you. I had what was the one before that? The Rio? I think there was an MP3
Rio.
Player.
There was in the Rio. Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I think it was the Rio was the one I had before that, which couldn't hold that many songs. But both of you, you've owned a number of iPods over the years?
Mostly. I owned a Shuffle and a Nano.
Uh-huh.
I don't think I ever got around to actually buying a full-fledged iPod.
Okay. Yeah, I never had the Touch version, the actual iPod Touch. But I had just about everything before that.
I had the original one. I bought a Nano for my mom once for a birthday, and then nothing until I bought the Touch a month ago. And again, I just, like I said, I was using my iPhone for music and stuff, and I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to buy a little device here and use it for music so I don't have to worry about my phone. And I think I was joking you guys on text message. I went in there and I they're like, oh, you're buying an iPod Touch? We don't sell these.
They didn't know what it was.
Yeah.
Almost. Well, I remember when the when he announced, I think it was the Shuffle, the one that was like the white stick of gum.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That had the USB part on it, on the top.
Right. Right.
With the little controller on it. Me and Scott, used to be on the show, we were at Macworld in San Francisco when Steve Jobs announced that on stage. And he had mentioned that some of the, that they would, it wouldn't be out for a week, but I think a couple of the San Francisco Apple stores had them right then and there. So we immediately went from there to the store and got in line and got a few.
Wow.
And those are the ones that had the, you could wear it around your neck, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then we took, I think that year for the company we worked at, I think we made stickers for, I think it was for our anniversary of the company, and put them on them and gave them away to all the employees. The iPod
Very nice.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
Yeah. Very cool. Didn't the iPod Nano have a little clip or something you can clip on your belt or something? Wasn't that the Nano?
That had a built-in clip. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Mm-hmm. It was. I think they went from the original iPod that with the physical buttons and the click wheel that would turn. Mm-hmm. Then I think the next generation at some point, maybe it was the next one, maybe it was one after that, but it no longer turned. It was kind of a touch thing.
Right. Yeah, I do remember that.
Which to me, I think was kind of the first touch device from Apple, wasn't it? That was prior to the phone.
Yeah, innovation kind of happened fast after that device came out, you know? Yeah, because it went to touch. It's a good question. I don't know, Tom.
Yeah, I mean, it was interesting because it just got smaller and smaller, and then they came out with the phone, and then that was it. Mm-hmm. After that, they didn't really innovate.
Didn't the Newton have a touch screen or not? Or was it just a stylus?
Nope, just stylus.
All right, okay. I was trying to give some Newton some props, I'm telling you.
No. That was discontinued a long time ago.
Oh yeah, that didn't make the Hall of Fame, I don't think.
No. What was interesting though was they announced this, I think, on a Wednesday, and it was in a what was it? It was in a simple memo or not a memo, like a press release that it didn't even the headline. I'm trying to find it here. The headline of the press release said, "The music lives on." It didn't say anything about the iPad till you read it, and then it said it's being phased out. So that announcement was on Wednesday. The device was sold out and removed from the retail store tables by Thursday.
Just think of what that device launched. I mean, it launched a change in the music industry. And, you know, if you look back on it, I think industry, you know, bands, musicians, songwriters, they're not really happy with it because I think it changed the whole way you were paid. But it certainly is good for the consumer and just totally changed the music industry.
Well, that was the Apple iTunes is what changed the music industry completely. But the iPod was simply a way of consuming that. Whether it was, you know, because for forever you had to buy the songs, or at the time with Napster, people would just download what they want, you know.
Just download, just rip it.
So,
I'm just saying.
Go ahead.
I mean, which one came first or which one led to one? I'm just saying, without the sleek device that could hold 1,000 songs, would iTunes ever have happened? You know, so just saying.
Yeah. Yeah, I know a lot of people wanted to go buy the iPod, even PC users, right? And to be able to make iTunes accessible to PC users, it basically saved Apple. I mean, it opened up the ecosystem. And then people went and bought Macs after that. I mean, because
yeah, exactly. Cool. Yeah.
Yes, Steve Jobs famously did not want to open up iTunes to the PC market.
He did not. Yeah. Want
he had to be convinced. Yeah. Yep. And once he did, yeah, it took off like crazy. Right.
And you're right, Vincent. I hadn't seriously thought about that. If you're a PC user and you went and got this cool device and started downloading, your next purchase might have been another Apple product, right? So maybe it opened a PC user up to the Apple ecosystem that might have changed their view. So that's a really good point.
Yeah.
So the iPod was released in October of 2001. January of that year, Apple launched iTunes. So iTunes came first. Then they had to Then they had to find a way to give that music to people to take with them.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Great.
So you're talking about almost a year in between.
Wow.
Because the iPod was released right after 9/11. Like really. The timing couldn't have been worse for them.
Yeah.
But the January was the beginning of that year is when that whole year was a big change in music, but.
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah.
Yep. So.
Yeah, the iPod also introduced the white earbuds. I mean, that was the whole thing too. That entire ecosystem.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The actual wired earbuds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's funny because I'm listening to audiobook of After Steve. So I'm hearing all these stories that I want to start commenting on, but I won't until we talk about that book because we'll talk about that one too. But just the history of things you never knew happened and why. And that was one of them was, the development of the AirPods, the wireless ones is pretty interesting. anyway, so yeah, kind of sad to see that disappear.
That's
what really brought Apple back. I mean, the iMac was part of it. What was that, like 1998 or 9?
98, yeah.
Yeah. And then this was the second big hit.
Right.
Yeah.
The
iMac kind of saved them from disaster, from cash flow and a reputation standpoint. And then this launched the revolution.
Right. And I remember that Steve Jobs famously, when he came back to the company, they had so many different SKUs of computers, models, that it was crazy to keep track of them. They're all starting to be, you know, listed by number, not by name. You know, it was very hard to keep track of who had what and if this machine was better than this one. And it was just a mess, including the clones. That was another thing that was going on at the time. But what he famously did was he drew on a whiteboard, he just put a cross, four quadrants, and in one he put desktop, and the other one he put laptop, and then one he put consumer, and the one he put professional. He said, and that's all we're going to make. Everything else goes away. And the first one was the iMac for the consumer desktop. So it was, And the Apple's kind of getting to that point now, too. Too many versions of things.
Yeah, a little bit.
Anyway, speaking of Macs, this next story, this is interesting. I just can't believe this. There are currently only three Macs that they make that are available for immediate shipping from Apple.
Oh.
Everything else is going to be 1 to 2 weeks all the way up to 11 weeks, depending on the model and the country it's going to. And it says some of those who have already placed orders are seeing longer waits. So I checked my order. I read that my Mac Studio was supposed to arrive between May 31st and like June 3rd or 4th. Well, now they're saying May 31st to June 15th.
Oh, no kidding. Ooh,
15-day swing, which I've never seen them do.
Yeah.
So it could be as early as May 31st, could be as late as June 15th.
Right. So, well, that's interesting. So the front end stayed the same, which is interesting. You would think they would – maybe they – I don't know why they do that, not just move it back a couple of days as well. But it's just – look, it's just the normal we're in now is everything is kind of buy and wait. and it's just the way it is.
I think that early date not changing is just optimism on their part.
I think so too. Yeah, it is,
maybe it'll still happen
right
early
right.
in the month. But yeah, there's a number of reasons for that. Obviously, the supply chain problems from China. Apple has said and estimated it could cost them as much as $8 billion in revenue this quarter.
Yeah, I saw that. That's impactful.
Yeah, and it's you know the double hit here of the increased demand during the pandemic, mm-hmm. Production disruption, and a growing demand of chips by car makers. Are snapping up all those chips as well. And they say that it's not actually the CPUs or the GPUs that they're out of. It's the little mundane chips, as they call them, the display drivers, the power management systems. The low-tech chips are the ones they can't get,
correct,
which are in Apple's stuff too.
Yeah, I read that some car manufacturers are shipping – I think it was maybe Ford is shipping cars that – like don't have rear heat and cool adjustability because when the chips come in, you can come and get the chip.
Yeah.
So everything else works, right? Everything else works great. But if you're in the back seat and you want air conditioning, you ain't getting it. Right. So it's, but it's going to be a chip
service one day.
It's not a key processor. It's just weird. But again, it's just, this is the normal and everything, you know, it's, you're going to wait months for things. And it is kind of interesting that, you know, these three are the ones that are available.
Wow. It's like, we got a car here for you. It's only got three tires, but we'll get the fourth one in soon. You can go ahead and take it now.
Exactly. Just come on. You can drive it. It'll pump around a little bit.
Yeah.
It'll work.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's crazy. You can't really do that, though, with Apple's products. Kind of have to have all of it together since it's all sealed in there at once. Anyway, so... Yep, we got
to
wait.
Yeah, prepare to wait.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Even if you've ordered. Go ahead.
I'd say their next earnings call would be what? They're late July, right? So we still got a couple, 2 or 3 months. But and $8 billion, that's for Mac, right? I know the last show we kind of put up the earnings with the Mac input impact. And Mac was up, right? Remember, wasn't it? Wasn't it up significantly? iPad was down and Mac was way up. And we may see a slump this quarter.
Yeah, iPad was the only one down. And the only reason Mac was up, obviously, was because of the popularity of the M1 chips.
Yeah, yeah.
Which are their own chips. And I think they had a surplus of everything else. But this makes me think that surplus is now gone. And Apple's having to wait with everybody else on a lot of this stuff. It's caught up with them, basically.
Their stock is about ready to start. You can go out and start, what is it, at 146, I just looked. So it's almost back to where you should start buying because that's a pretty good deal, 146. Mm.
Yeah, I think it's really going to be a rough year as far as shipping, as far as getting things when they need to. Things are going to be delayed a bit. It makes me wonder about the watch coming up. Right.
Yeah. Fair point.
Yeah.
Fair point. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is the Series 8 going to be delayed? We'll have to see. Again, speaking of the watch, Johnny Ive, who I've been listening a lot about in this book after Steve, but he recently talked to, he was a guest editor of the Financial Times, and he sat down with his company partner, Loveform, the company he made with Mark Newsom. And they discussed a number of things, and one of them was his obsession with silver and how Newsom helped him finish the Apple Watch. And I didn't know this. He calls it the magic of silver. And he said that I guess he said because his father worked with that material. I don't know if he was a silversmith. But he is particularly drawn to that type of material, which explains why at some point all of Apple's products became silver.
Aluminium.
Yes, even that.
Yes.
Aluminium. He said silver is uniquely pure and noble. It is malleable and rewarding to work with. While it is inherently valuable and precious, it remains affordable and so is made into a range of objects with more applications than most other precious metals. Mm. He says, for me, there is something captivating about the nature of its color. Silver is an ethereal white. It almost has no color or every color, while titanium or nickel are very warm and stainless steel is so very cold and blue.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He likes silver. Okay.
He does. Yeah.
And we still have it today in most of the Macs, even though he's not, or Apple devices, even though he's not really working to design those these days. Now on the watch, when he talks about that, this is part of, he kind of reiterates this, and this is what I heard in the After Steve book, but he got stuck. He was really struggling on the design of the watch, the physical design. And he asked Mark Newsom, or is it Newsom? Mark? Mm-hmm. Yeah, Newsom to help him. And together they came up with the design for the watch. And how he described it was, how did he say? It was like, it was not perfection, but it was like, where is it? How it was, there, it couldn't, you couldn't imagine it any other way. In other words, they got it down to the absolute minimal design, which I think is pretty cool.
Yeah, it is. It is. Well, I mean, computers, you know, by the time they were, you know, redesigning computers, you know, after the iPod came out, you know, you kind of had something to go with. And Johnny Ive was just a genius. The watch was, they were kind of taking something that had been around forever.
Mm-hmm.
And reimagining it. So you kind of had to get it right, you know, and you know, watches were round and now they're not, you know, so it was genius.
Yeah. He said he spent a lot of time, wrestling with the big, founding, ideas and the fundamental issues of interface. And he had assumed that the work on the actual object would be fairly straightforward. And that's where he got stuck.
Yeah.
With it, because then it's suddenly like, what is this going to be? And he describes it as, I always hope to achieve that sense of inevitability, that simplicity where there doesn't really appear to be a rational alternative.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, you can't imagine it any other way.
Right.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Well, I think the key word there is simplicity. And if you look at all Apple's designs, they're genius, right? They're simplicity with like awesome non-simplicity built in. And you don't even know it.
Right. Yeah.
The uniqueness is all around the digital crown. I mean, everything else is kind of like, looks like a phone, right? I mean, it's beveled edges and touch screen and everything else. But like that interface, to be able to introduce the crown and the way you can, you know, scroll through things and then press to click. I mean, it was just definitely a unique interface that I don't. It's only on the iPod Max now, AirPods, right?
Yes.
They reduced it.
Yeah, he. Kind of interesting. In the book, he mentions that he liked the idea of combining the crown concept, you know, pairing that with the computer, if you will, on your wrist. To merge the old and the new, to have that piece of history in it.
Right. Yeah.
Which I agree. Yeah. It's one of the cooler interfaces to work with. I really love it on the AirPods Max too. And I'm hoping they don't take it away and turn it into a touch surface, which they've been putting out tons of patents for. But
then you have nothing to worry about.
Yeah. Okay. Also, speaking of changing input here, Bloomberg has backed a report that the iPhone 15 may switch to USB-C charging port next year. So not this year's phone, but next year. I guess this is Apple's attempt to simplify their connection issues, which are quite confusing.
Exactly.
So I, you know, what is it? Now they've made the iPads now have USB-C. The MacBooks have had it for like 5 years or more. So that's why I'm thinking, well, you've had those for 5 years. Why has it taken so long to turn everything else into USB-C?
Right.
That's just the inconsistency is crazy.
Let me ask you guys, when's the last time you plugged in your phone to charge it?
Last night.
Okay. All right. That's a dumb question.
And I'll answer it this way. It depends on what phone you have. If you have an older phone that's not MagSafe, then
we all have the 13, so don't we? Three of us have the 13.
Yeah, I have the latest, but like I have a magnetic plate back there for my magnetic for my car. And so I've used that forever. And I don't have a mag because then everyone in my household would have to have one. So it's kind of bad.
Well, you need a MagSafe thing for your car.
Right. Well, but then everyone would have to. It might.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And yeah. And if you have like one of those cases that are like a wallet or portfolio thing.
Yeah. I know what you're talking about.
Well, yeah. You can do what I did. You go buy a new charging station with wheels, otherwise known as a car that has wireless charging.
It's kind of hard.
It's a pretty expensive charger, but it works really good.
Does it fit on your nightstand? I don't know that it will.
It would be very difficult to get it up the stairs. But I was thinking, I was reading this story. I'm like, I haven't plugged in my phone, and I couldn't remember last time I plugged it in to charge it. You know, everything's wireless. Mm. But I get it. But yeah. It's a good move. I think it'll help with cable situation. And isn't it already something they have to do in Europe, or am I thinking something different? Europe is kind of leading the way.
They're going to be forced to do something, I think, at some point.
Yeah.
So the sooner they can do it, the better off they'll be. This article says that Apple already uses USB-C across all of its device chargers, including on new iPhones. That's true. Yep. Although I have the portable, the travel charger, the MagSafe with the Apple, the white one that folds in half, right? And it's USB-C that you plug into the wall. The little brick is USB-C, but the actual device is still Lightning. So the cable
it is.
The cable's USB-C to Lightning.
Right.
I just looked at mine, and you're right. I just pulled it out. Like I didn't notice that.
It's frustrating.
Ah.
Everything should be one, right?
I mean,
Apple got rid of the 30-pin connector and went to Lightning in 2012 with the iPhone 5.
Really?
Mm-hmm. We've had Lightning for 10 years now.
Mm-hmm. Oh, remember those chargers, man? Those were amazing. And going from that to Lightning was like lightning and day. How's that sound? Night and day.
lightning and day?
I tried to make a pun. It didn't work out very well.
But what's cool about it was reversible. You didn't, you know, the 30 pin, you had to put it in the right way. The Lightning, you can just plug it in. Either side works, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
But,
USB-C is interesting. I mean, some of it carries data, some of it carries data and power. And then with the iPad, we connected an external mic to it so that you can record and with better sound on video.
Right.
But I'm wondering whether or not you can do that with a USB-C phone. You can then finally use all your accessories, or maybe not.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. The other thing is, and I just assumed that Apple, and because of what I'd heard, that Apple is moving towards a portless phone. Right? Oh. None. It's all be MagSafe.
Yeah, I can see that.
Right. Totally. So that's why I assumed, they'll never put USB-C on the iPhone. Every year they didn't do it. I thought, they're just getting ready to make this big change. Well, now it looks like maybe they're not going to, or maybe that's further away than we thought, the portless one. I know they want to make one that way. That just would pretty much seal up the phone, right?
It would seal up the phone, maybe give you some more space to do some other things on it. I don't know, but that would be a bigger cultural change and shock than the earbuds with the iPhone or a charging cord, right? So I think
that'd
be a pretty big cultural change to not have a port.
Well, that we got that change a while back when they removed the headphone jack.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So it's not out of line for what they could do. We'll have to see. What else is going on? Now it's just a lot of rumor things. We're how many weeks away from WWDC?
Three.
Three?
What is it? The seventh?
Sixth.
Three weeks.
Yep. So.
Oh. All right.
Time for a lot of rumors. So.
Wow, time is flying. Are you kidding me? It's going to be June 6th before we know it. 3 weeks.
Yes.
I'll be done.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
So one of these rumors, this is from, who is this? Ming Chi Kuo.
Mm-hmm.
Kuo.
Yeah.
I'm never going to get that right. MCK. From MCK. they're saying that Apple is going to come out with a cheaper Apple TV. And they're saying the second half of this year to improve the cost structure of the Apple TV. So if you look at it right now, the Apple TV 4K starts at $179 for 32 gigs of storage. 64 gigabyte model is $199. And they also sell the previous generation Apple TV HD for $149 with 32 gigs of storage. So I can see that they would, as their Apple TV programming ramps up and becomes better and there's more of it, I can see how they want more, make it cheaper for people to get in on it would make sense. The only reason that your Apple TV right now is so powerful is, you know, number one with the storage, obviously, is to download games and things like that. Apple Arcade. But if they stripped all of that out and just made kind of a bare bones version just for streaming, they could bring that price way down.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's a great move.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, because the smart TVs with apps embedded is, you know, obviously a big competitor. And this would be very, very powerful to have something under $100, maybe like $99, and all of a sudden you're locked in.
That would be
you know, kind of a little bit of a game changer, I think.
Right. But like, kind of like it was for them with the HomePod when they came out with the Mini and priced it at $99, they started selling a lot of them.
Yeah. Or you make it $79. I mean, shoot, that sells so many of those. Mm-hmm. My gosh.
Right. So interesting.
Plug it into your studio display and there you go.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm telling you, there's just going to be a software update for that.
That's true.
It can already do it, right? You don't need any more hardware. But on the flip side of this is there was a report earlier that Apple's working on a version of the Apple TV with an integrated HomePod speaker and camera for FaceTime, which would obviously wouldn't be a cheaper route to go. That'd be more expensive.
Yeah.
It would basically be like a sound bar. Right, with a camera.
It would.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think the key thing there is where do you put it? Because where do you put all these things? You put them up on the mantle or on the side. If the camera's not somewhere that's conducive, you know, is it going to be effective? But but integrating that device would be nice because that's what everyone does. Although I hope you could still stereo. You'll put two of them in the sequence to have stereo sound. That's definitely need that.
Definitely.
I'm waiting for three. I want to do three HomePods.
Okay. So another, this isn't rumor, but this is a patent, for Apple is they've invented a future breathalyzer test built into the car keys app for iPhone and Apple Watch. So this is an,
let's hope that stays a patent. I don't know.
This is them really brainstorming here. So the idea here, from what I understand, is you would have to pass this breathalyzer on your iPhone or watch before it would unlock your car and allow you to drive it.
Or allow you to text your ex. Yeah.
Well, what's interesting is they said the criteria can include one or more biometric, in other words, blood alcohol level, right? We talked about that with the watch before. Yeah. And or taking a series of challenges, manual dexterity, mental clarity, math problems, that sort of thing, in order to remove the restrictions.
I'd fail that. I'd fail that sober.
Yeah, and it says the user is notified that they failed the test and restrictions on operating the vehicle remain in place. So, interesting.
And then there's a quick link to Uber.
Yes. Yeah, it should automatically just call one based on your location.
Exactly. That's very true. We joke about it, but that's probably something that should be in there.
Yep. Okay.
Yeah.
This next thing I want to talk about, this is from Bloomberg. This is Mark Gurman's newsletter he does every week or 2 weeks. I'm not sure how often it comes out. But there's this whole rumor swirling around Apple buying a company called, CANOO. Mm-hmm. It's an EV startup company that's working on autonomous vehicles. And have actually developed several of them. But they're in trouble right now, financially, struggling, that they may not have enough cash to keep operating. So many are thinking that this is where Apple could come in and mm-hmm. kind of take over and help their own project of working on the car, mm-hmm. Project Titan. And we're going to talk more about cars here, I think, both of you, for what you like this week. So this is interesting. Apple has been hiring people for quite a while from Ford, Rivian, Tesla, BMW, Mercedes, Volvo, Waymo, even people from Canoo. Some of their executives and engineers actually work for Apple now. So this is a company they're not unfamiliar with. And people are saying that if they did purchase them, it would not be necessarily for their tech, but more for their people who just specialize in or have expertise in car interiors, exterior software, automotive manufacturing, battery technology, et cetera, et cetera. So
they would take the design of the car, I mean, head on. It looks kind of like an Apple.
Well, they've got several that they're working on. They worked on a delivery vehicle and a pickup truck, but they're also working on something they're calling a lifestyle vehicle, which is which is exactly what you described. But there's no steering wheel, I don't think, in it.
Right?
Maybe there
is. Kind of like a monorail car.
Yes,
it does look like a VW bus of the future.
Yeah, yeah. It said a minivan, but has limousine like rear seating.
If you can seat seven, I'm game.
There you go.
Well, I'm still telling you that the autonomous car is a good topic, but I love driving my car. I don't want to get in a car where I'm not driving.
Right.
Now the car drives itself sometimes, but I'm still there. But I don't know. And also, I read this article, Tom. What about manufacturing? I mean, look at Rivian, right? Rivian opened at 125. Their stock went up to 180. Now it's like 25. It's design is great. It's build. That's what knocks you down when you're starting a new car company is, can you build it and where are you going to build it?
Well, Tesla has proved that you can do it. It is possible. And Apple has the bank account, I think, to do it.
That's right.
Yeah.
Did Canoo have manufacturing? Or are they more design and prototype? That's what I was trying to see.
Oh,
And, you know. And Tesla had like $500 million in government loans that they actually paid back early, I think.
Right.
That helped them, obviously. But it is, you know, converting design and prototype into full time manufacturing, it's hurting companies like Rivian. It's just hard to do. It takes a lot of money.
Right. And Apple has said that the design of the one from Canoo is very similar to what they were working on.
Really? Okay, good.
So Apple is aiming to produce a vehicle with full self-driving capabilities, no steering wheel or pedals, later this decade. And according to Mark Gurman, people with knowledge of the Apple project doubt that the company is currently on track to hit that goal.
Yeah, it's tough.
Is Siri behind the wheel? Because we're not going to get there.
Right. But even an even less groundbreaking vehicle could still be a hit. And again, from that book I'm reading, there's a lot of talk about it when that project actually started. But there was debate within Apple, you know, as to how far they should go with this, right? Should it be totally autonomous like this, or should it be more like what Tesla is doing, right?
Right.
Yeah, so they've been debating that, but they have been full steam on trying to get one to be completely driving by itself.
Yeah, I think that last statement you said is very important. That you know, a lot of times you say don't let perfect get in the way of good.
Yes.
Or even great. Mm-hmm. And you know, I know we're going to talk about our cars in a second, but you know, the self-driving elements of all the Fords and the Cadillacs that are coming out and the Teslas. They work really great. And I can see, Tom, because you've always talked about what if there's construction? What if there's changes in roads? Mm-hmm. These cars can get pretty smart. It's going to come down to how far they can see around their ecosystem, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. and how they can process data. Because those dang things, they do pretty well. I'm like, all right, I'm going to do it. And I'm like, I'm going to let go of the steering wheel. And it works really good. And it tells you when to get back on the wheel. So. But the difference here is no steering wheel, no pedals. That is totally amazing.
That's why I still think that the first ones they produce will only work within certain areas, like maybe only within.
You use your phone as a joystick.
There you go.
If you need
it. There you go. Yeah.
No. Or the crown on your Apple Watch. Yeah. but things like driving just around the Apple campus. Right? Mm, something that's controlled. They could easily do that. They can probably do that right now. But when you start to expand into the rest of the world, it's a whole different thing.
It's definitely an interesting market because, like, with Apple, when they entered the watch industry, they dominated the watch industry. When they entered, you know, headphones, they dominated with AirPods. Like, when they go into cars, they can't just be another one. They can't be, you know, they want to be the one that you buy.
Right.
You know, and it's just saying, oh, yeah, I'm going to buy the Android car instead. You know, it's no, you're going to buy the Apple car. Right. And it's going to be amazing. And that's a really hard challenge.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Price point, too, is key in the EV industry, too. And they're going up, right? Prices are going up, not down. And whoever can break in with the $25,000 EV and is self-driving or not, I mean, somewhere around there, the $25,000 one is gonna kill it because charging is gonna get a lot better and charging stations is gonna get a lot better. That's all gonna happen, but it's price point because right now you're not gonna get a good EV for under $40,000, and that's, you know, not everyone can do that.
Hmm. Yeah, that was Canoe's goal, was to create this vehicle under 40. But Vincent, both of those things you mentioned, the watch and the AirPods.
Yeah.
We think of them as a huge success right now. When they both debuted, they were considered failures.
Right.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Horrible sales.
But Apple knew that they were going to be success.
Yeah. Horrible sales. People mocked them, made fun of them.
Right.
And they both, now we look back and we're like, well, yeah, it was genius. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I have a feeling no matter what they come up with, it's going to be the same. Same thing. Right.
Yeah. People may or may not pay an Apple premium for a car, though. You'll pay $750 for a watch because you're not paying $50,000, right? So I think, would you pay $65,000 for an Apple car that you can get on a Ford that's 50?
It'll be a subscription.
Apple One Plan. Show up, and every September 1st, a new car shows up, right? Because you got a subscription.
The upgrade program. Yep.
You laugh. It could be. We laugh. It could be something like that. You never know.
I just want to know if it comes with stickers.
I'm sure it does.
Okay.
It does come with a bumper sticker.
Okay. Then I'm in. I'm in.
Do like emojis and stickers, you know, when someone cuts you off. The finger emoji comes out.
But the charger's not going to be included, obviously.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. We'll get to what we like in just a minute. But first, a quick reminder that the Apple Watchcast is brought to you by the wonderful support of our Patreon subscribers. Become a patron of the Apple Watchcast, and for as little as $1 a month, you can help us keep producing the show and get a little something extra in return, like access to bonus episodes, Apple Watchcast gear, and even be a guest on the show. So check out our page at patreon.com/applewatchcast to subscribe and become a patron of the Apple Watchcast. Big thanks to all of our patrons. You make this possible. All right. Now, continuing on our Apple or Apple, on our car theme, both of you have a pick, ironically, and you didn't get together on this. That is the same thing with a different model, basically. But go ahead, Chris. Why don't you kick it off?
Yeah, there's no collusion. So it was kind of funny that Vincent and I had this. Yeah, so when I bought my Mach-E, I think I briefly mentioned that they had an Apple Watch app. And obviously, I've had the car 6 months now. So 6 months this week. So I thought I'd kind of revisit the app and what I like about it and some things that I think would be nice to change. So it's a real nice app. Basically, I have it as a complication, which is great. So I can tap it and open it. It actually has a picture of my car. And the name of the car, because you can name your car. That's the coolest thing about like EVs, you can name your car. I'm sure you can do it for other cars too, but there's only three buttons on the screen. In the middle is the start button, and then the left side is the unlock, and the right side is the lock. So you can, you know, unlock it, lock it with, and it's kind of a put your finger on it and hold. It's not a force press, it's not a tap, it's kind of just push and hold. And then you can do that for the start. So it's actually pretty good. It works very well. You know, in the wintertime, what you kind of do is you kind of in the car itself, you can put settings for auto start. And the thing is, you can't put more than one, which is unfortunate. You can put different days and times, but you can't really manipulate what it is. So in the warm weather, I had it, you know, heating, the seats coming on, the steering wheel coming on, and the heat coming on. So when you get in the car, it's like, wow, this is awesome. So now I'm starting to convert it over to cool because it's getting a little warmer in the Southeast United States. And you know, when you're sitting out in the parking lot and it gets extremely hot, you can start it and the air conditioning will come on and be nice and cool. But it works extremely well. I wish it was a little more SIRI enabled, where I can kind of talk to my watch to do it. I mean, you can use Siri to open the app, but you can't use it to kind of manipulate it. So it's very basic. It's very good, but it needs a little more, you know, verbal command interaction. And I think it would be a super app. And then I think if it had like a trunk open, would be great. And then a frunk open, which is the front of the car, which has no engine, you know, frunk open. I think that'd be kind of cool. Would be kind of finish it up. So I give it a 3 out of 5. I think they'll kind of improve it over time, but it works really well. So that's kind of the Ford Mach-E watch app, and I use it all the time. I'm always walking up and unlocking it and you know using it as well.
So is it a particular app just for that car, or is it Ford Pass?
It's Ford Pass.
Okay.
Is the main the phone app.
Right.
And then Ford Pass has a watch app that's on your phone or your watch.
Nice.
So yeah, it's a Ford Pass watch version.
So you can actually start your car from your watch.
Yes.
Lock, unlock, all that stuff, obviously.
Yes.
Yeah. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It is. It's very good. It works really well. And you know, I've started my car with my nose. I'll tell you that right now.
Okay. That's great. All right, Vincent, what do you like this week?
Yeah, it's going to be like a repeat of what Chris has said, but mine is the Lexus Inform app and the watch. It's essentially an extension of their Inform app suite. And in a later model years, last fall, I picked up a late model Lexus and I haven't purchased the service, you know, because it's a subscription. I don't know if yours, Chris, came with it or not, but I decided that I was going to finally purchase it now that it's getting very warm. And so if my car is parked out in the parking lot, I can start it. By the time I get down from my office, that I can, you know, it's already cooled down, right? That's the whole point. So that it's a lot more comfortable when you get in. So just kind of what Chris described, I mean, you can do the remote start, you press and hold, lock and unlock, you can turn on your hazards. It also tells you, you know, how many miles you have remaining until you're empty, any issues with your engine. And it also has a GPS map on there to tell you where you last parked, just in case you somehow mislocated your car. It does require the car has 3G service. It has to be an area that has 3G service in order for it to communicate to your phone and your watch. And yes, mine and on the Lexus app, you can nickname your car as well. So that's pretty cool, right? Which I didn't. I just choose the default model. It's just when you were saying that I went change the nickname. It's kind of neat. The app typically comes with any Lexus, but like I said, you can add this as an extra add-on. And my biggest complaint about it, and this is specifically other Lexus and Toyota users who have this app, you can start your car on your watch, but as soon as you walk up to it and you unlock the door or you grab the door handle, it will turn off the car. And
what?
Everywhere really? In the forums, they're like, it's a safety mechanism. So somebody doesn't jump in and steal your car. I'm like, wait, it doesn't make any sense.
That is odd.
That's
wow.
Off. Yeah, it is weird. It's the weirdest thing. It serves its purpose in the sense where it started the car and cools it down or heats it up, whatever. But yeah, I mean, once you get in, you have to start it again. The thing with Toyota and the way they handle remote start.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. I like the app. A lot more capability, which is nice. And the turning the car off is kind of odd. Mine doesn't do that. Mine will stay on, although it's really not on. It's just like ready to go. Right. That's good. I would like to see this app have that. Maybe the miles, left on the charge, incorporate things like, the nearest charging station. Those would be kind of cool. But that's a great app, Vincent.
So Vincent, is your Lexus is it a hybrid or is it a?
It's a regular,
It's an ICE, right?
Very expensive gas car.
Okay. Yes. Internal combustion engine. Okay.
Right. There you go.
Got it. But you can still start it from your watch.
Right.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks. I didn't mention if you turn it on and you forget, but for some reason, it will turn off.
Okay. I've done that too. You can set it. Can you set yours? How long it'll turn off? Mine's 10 minutes.
No.
You can.
Yeah, okay. It's automatic. Yeah.
But I'm not burning gas. That's no big deal, but it's still, on.
Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, when Apple comes out with their car, we're all going to look back at these apps and these vehicles, kind of like we look back on the old Rio MP3 player versus the iPod. That's all I'm saying. It's all going to change. In the future. All right. I don't have anything specific this week. I actually thought I'd give you a kind of a rundown of what I'm going to be reviewing coming up. One of them is, as I've been mentioning throughout the show, the book After Steve, How Apple Became a $1 trillion Company and Lost Its Soul. That title is, well, I can already tell you something about it. That title, they should not have marketed that way. It's actually a better book than the title leads on. I will tell you that much. Anyway, I'm almost finished. I have just a few more chapters left, so I'll talk about it when I'm done. Maybe next show, because I know, Chris, you were looking at reading this as well. So we can talk about that together. The other thing I wanted to talk about is an app I just discovered that I need some time to evaluate it, but it looks pretty promising. It's called Gentler Streak, and it tracks your workouts and fitness just like Apple does with the Activity app. But as the name indicates, it's not so strict, and it aims to guide and encourage you instead of merely tracking you. So it also has a feature that I've been whining about since the beginning of the watch, and that is that you can set your status from active to on a break or sick or injured, and it does not affect your streaks, your goals. So finally, someone has come up with that. And I know that would still kill your workout streaks from the Activity app, but it's nice that you have that choice. This app is interesting because it also gives you great insights on your overall fitness and health habits throughout the day, the week, the month, the year. What it does is it guides you through a path. So you can have down days and you can have higher days as long as you stay within that path. And what's really interesting is I loaded the app, downloaded it, and it took a good minute and a half to load all of my health data and all of my activity once you give it permission. And then it gave me a complete review of what I've done.
Oh, no kidding.
Which was amazing to see. It animates an actual chart for the entire year. You can see how you did throughout the year. I mean, it's this is that thing I've been talking about, taking all this data and actually doing something useful with it that people can understand. Anyway, I'm going to be using this app. I'll report back after I've had time to use it more. But again, coming up, we've got the After Steve book. And as you mentioned, Vincent, the Build book as well. Mm-hmm. That's on my list to look at next. And then I have a book that I recently got. It's called the App Book, the App Icon Book. I think I mentioned it before when they were doing it. It's finally finished and they've shipped it. And it's a book of artwork of apps throughout the history of the iPhone, which is just a beautiful, beautiful book. Graphic design, the history of it, designing them, everything about apps, designing the actual icons that you look at every day. And then also the Mac Studio, whenever that comes in, and the studio display. So just some of the stuff I've got coming up.
Very nice.
Yeah, should be pretty good.
Yeah, I joked about my. I'm just about to finish. I'll finish a book probably tomorrow, and I'll start the After Steve book. So I'll be ready by the next show.
Okay, you got 2 weeks. No pressure.
Yeah, I'll be done next week.
Okay,
I'll be 2 books into it before our next show.
All right. Anything else before we, I don't know, what did we do? We put our watch on the nightstand in sleep mode. I don't know. I didn't have anything prepared. So, all right. Well, that's all the time we have for this episode. Thank you, Vincent and Chris, for being here. I really do appreciate it. Thank you to everyone out there for listening. Again, if you'd like to support our show, check out our Patreon page at patreon.com/AppleWatchCast. It's a great way to help us to continue to produce the show. So check it out at patreon.com/AppleWatchCast. Links to stuff we talk about can be found on our website at applewatchcast.com. You can follow us in Apple Podcasts or any other podcast service you prefer. If you have a question about the Apple Watch or about our show, send us an email at comments@applewatchcast.com. Look for us and follow us on Facebook and Twitter. As always, thanks for listening. Stay safe. And until our next show, you're on your own time.
Remember to rate us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts.